A little bit about Metzia, and then we'll talk about Chatich Nas Nevel in Lach. That was something that we began, but we didn't finish. So we got up to the sugya on Daf Vav Amud Aleph, which is the sugya of Migu de Chashid Amamona Chashid Nami Ashvu Asa. So let's just see where we're up to. We're on Daf Vav Amud Aleph, and if you count down about 10 lines.
Stretching the memory, it's been a long time.
Right, so I'll just review what we did, so I'll jog your memory. Rabbi Yochanan was of the opinion that Chashid Al-Mamona is Chashid Nami Ashvuasa. He's also Chashid of the Shvu. If he'll take a false, if he'll be willing to purge himself in order to steal money, then he'll also purge himself under oath. And Abai wants to suggest that Rabbi Yochanan is right, and he thinks that in the case of Chashid al-Mamon, he's Chashid al-Shvua, and if that be the case, we're stuck with Shnayim Oksim Vitalis, because in Shnayim Oksim Vitalis, Rabbi Yochanan already committed himself to the position that the whole institution, the whole enterprise of a Shvua in Shnayim Oksim Vitalis is a rabbinic, a takonis chachomim, because of Shema Chayshin and Shema Tokev Adam Talisa Shel Chavero. Now, certainly on a Doraisa level, if the fear is that he went ahead and he stole someone's talis, we cannot trust his Shvua. And it would seem that the Rabbanon should follow suit, meaning it's hard to believe that according to Rabbi Yochanan, if we hold that Choshen Amamona, Choshen Ashvuasa, the Rabbanon are going to waive that, and they're going to say, okay, he stole someone else's talis, and we can trust his Shvua. If the Torah doesn't trust his Shvua, why would the Rabbanon trust his Shvua? So Abaye is going to have to reformulate the Shvua, the nature of the Shvua, according to Rabbi Yochanan, so that it could be reconciled with Rabbi Yochanan's Shita, that someone who's an outright Gazan is not trusted on a Shvua. So how is Abai going to accomplish that goal? He says, Chayshinon Shema Milvi Yishana Yeshlo Olav. Why are we afraid that Reuven is going to grab on to, you know, confiscate Shimon's talis, which seems to be an act of outright gzela? The answer is that Reuven justifies this in his own mind because he knows that Shimon owes him money and he has no evidence to prove that Shimon owes his money. Shimon therefore has no, he's not going to be motivated to admit that he owes the money. That's called Milvi Yishana Yeshlo Olav. So his friend Shimon owes him money and he has no way, Reuven has no way of forcing, of getting to collect that money, of accomplishing that goal. So what he's going to do is, he's going to grab on to Shimon's talis, he's going to take a shvua that at least half the talis is his. And in so doing, he's repaying the chov that Shimon owes him. So he's not really guilty of theft. So we're not afraid, according to Abai's formulation, that a person will go over to someone else, see a talis that he likes, and grab onto the talis. We're talking about a person who takes the law into his own hands, so to speak. He grabs onto the talis because he wants to take the talis, or at least half the talis, as payment of a chov, that an outstanding loan that so-and-so owes him. So if that be the case, he's not a real gazlan. He's not a man off the street that is chotev talisa shel chavero. Such a person would not shy away from a shvua. But we're talking about a case of a person who grabs onto someone's talis in lieu of a loan that's owed to him, and money that he's not able to collect, and he feels that he's justified in doing so because he's taking the law into his own hands. He's collecting that chov. Well, we're going to impose upon him a shvua. And the reason for that is because we want to make sure that he's telling the truth. So the Gemara says, Yehochi, if you're telling me that the only chashash here is not that he's an outright gazlan, but rather he's collecting an old loan, is nishkol below shvua. Why not allow him to take half the talis and award him half the talis even without a shvua? If you're, the only scenario that you're afraid of is that he's collecting a chov that's coming to him. Well, if he's doing so, then magilo, as we say, you know, he has legal rights to collect that money. So why are we forcing him to take a shvua? So the Gemara now reformulates the preposition of Abai. Ella, but rather, what did Abai mean? Chayshina and Shema Safik Mil Bishani Yesh Lo Love. He, Reuven, who grabs onto Shimon's house, is not definite about the fact that Shimon did not pay him back the chov that he owes him. He thinks maybe Shimon didn't pay him back. So he justifies grabbing onto someone's talis based on the 50% chance that Shimon really owes him this chov. But once he has to take a shvua, and he's got to commit himself under oath that Shimon owes him that money, then he'll shy away. We can trust him on the shvua because, again, he's not an outright gazlan. He thinks that he has legal rights. So Gemara now asks the following question, raises the following objection. V'lav amrinan. Why not say that we shouldn't be afraid of such a thing because tough is mamona misfeka. If a person grabs onto someone else's mamon, in this case he's tokev taliso shechavero because of a suffik chov, is mishtamanami misuffik. Maybe we should be afraid of the fact that even when we impose upon him the oath, he's willing to take that oath because he thinks that maybe the guy owes him the money. Oh, so the Gemara says, "Amar Rav Sheshes, Brei Ravidi, Parshe Inishmi Inshi Mi Suffik Shvua." A person would never take a shvua based on a suffik. He's not going to say that I had rights to this talis and it's mine, or half the talis, based on a suffik. Maybe he owes me the money, and therefore, Parshe Inishmi Suffik Shvua. Although he's willing, yeah, there's a paradox here. Based on the suffik, he's going to go ahead, chutzpahdik, and he's going to grab the talis. That he has no problem. Because he justifies this in his mind based on suffik. But if you add the extra measure of requiring a shvuah, is parshi inshi mi suffik shvuah. Lo parshi mi suffik mama. He's going to be tokev taliso shechaver because of the suffik that so-and-so owes him money. That's the psychology. But if you impose part of a shvuah, at that point he raises his hand and says, "Ad kan, I'm not going to take a shvuah sheker based on a suffik," meaning it could be my shvuah is correct and I really deserve half the talis, but he knows and he's honest with himself that he might not have any rights that half the talis to take a shvuah on a suffik that he wouldn't do. So the Gemara asks my time. You know, this is counterintuitive. For a person to grab onto someone's talis based on a suffik, I mean, that's a suffik zela. Why would he do such a thing? And then you're going to tell me, well, he's very careful about a shvuah, and he would not take a shvuah on a suffik. What's the mentality, what's the psychology here? Why is he able to justify grabbing onto someone's talis based on a suffik? But chas v'shalom, he wouldn't put himself into a jeopardy of taking a shvuah based on a suffik that maybe he's taking a false oath. So Gemara explains the psychology very well. Mamon isei bechazara. In the case of mamon, if he'll clarify later on down the line that he had no rights to this mamon because in fact Shimon had repaid the loan, then he'll just simply give him back the mamon. He'll say, "My friend, here, I'm sorry, I apologize, I took your talis illegally, here's your talis." But shvua, lesser bechazara. Once he takes the shvua, even if he clarifies for himself later on, he investigates and he finds out that he really did not take, you know, the oath on the up and up. He falsified his oath because, in truth, Shimon doesn't owe him any money. It's farfalin, as we say. It's irretractable. The shvua was already taken. And once the shvua was taken, he violated the prohibition. So in a suffik, he's not going to do so. Boy, Rabbi Zera, this is where we want to start the new sugya. We're talking about Shnayim Ochsim Betalis. Tekafa Echad Bifanenu. What happens if in front of Bezdin, Reuven grabs onto Shimon's talis? Now, obviously, in this case, since the shvua was not yet taken, then Beis Din L'chora should be motivated to reverse the situation. We saw Reuven in front of our eyes grab this talis from Shimon. We're not going to tolerate that situation. Mal. So the Gemara says, "Echi dami." What's the case? Either shasik, if Shimon says nothing, you know, he's totally silent and passive, then we have a principle called Oduye Odile, which means Shtika Kodadamya. And this odas paldin, that Reuven really has rights to that talis. But if on the other hand Shimon is yelling Hamas, what are we stealing my talis for? With that protest, certainly my havilei lemevat. There's no element here of hodas paldin. He did what he could, and he started yelling and screaming, this guy is an outright thief, he's stealing my talis. Then what should be the situation here? In the absence of Odas Baldin, then it's as if he grabbed on to, stole someone's talis in front of our eyes, and surely we should reverse the situation. We should force Reuven to give up his tfisa on the talis. Lo tzricha, says the Gemara. Now the Gemara gets heavy into the issue of how to define odas baldin. Dishasik meikara. Initially, when Reuven grabbed onto Shimon's talis in the presence of Bezdin, Shimon said nothing. He was silent. That itself, lechora, should generate the halacha of odas baldin. But hadat sabach. Now he starts yelling and screaming and protesting. My, what's the din? Shall we say since initially he said nothing, that indicates that Odas Baldin, that he agrees to Reuven's grabbing onto his talis. Now he wants to change his mind. We have halacha in a case of Odas Baldin. Once it's valid, there's witnesses, there's Bezdin, and now a case it's irreversible. Odilma. Or perhaps we should say this is not called Hadas Baldin. Why? Came under Katsava Hashta. Now he's yelling and screaming. And he puts forward this protest. Iglai Milsa. Oh, so now we have to know. So why was he Shoseik initially? Right, in the first side in Reb Zera, we said that his shtika was Oda. Now he changed his mind. He can't change his mind and retract his Oda. This is a different kind of grabbing onto something. Normally, if somebody grabs onto something of yours and you're shoseik, certainly that shesika is odah. But here, the grabbing on, the tfiso, took place where? In front of Bezdin. A person feels that in front of Bezdin, Bezdin sees all the facts on the ground are crystal clear. He had his talis, and Reuven grabbed his talis. Reuven's an outright goslin. There's no question that Bezdin are going to know how to deal with Reuven for stealing Shimon's talis. So Shimon says, at this point, I don't need a proactive involvement. All I have to do is let Bezdin do what it has to do, and for sure they're going to take care of it. And that's called in the Gemara's language, Kosovar HaKachazu L'Rabbanan. Bezdin see exactly that he's, what he's doing, he's stealing my talis. I don't have to make a macha. And therefore my original odah was not meaningful. It was not serious. It was not binding. There's a justification for this odah. So the Achronim say that the Gemara, Rav Zeira, is vacillating back and forth with two definitions of odah spaldin. One definition is that we take the odah spaldin as is, and we activate the principle of Kimea Eidim Domi. And the other principle says, no, we don't take the Hodah as is. We take it in a broader context. And if there are factors that indicate that he wasn't serious about it, then we still give him the ability to reinterpret his words, or his lack of words, in this case of Shtika Kodah Domi. So the first side says, no. Shtika Kodah Domi means that whenever a person puts forward a claim against you, you have to counter that claim. That's the rights of a tovea, that a tovea is given the monetary rights to put forward a claim, and you, as the nitba, as the defendant, have one of two choices. Either you argue immediately and counter with another argument, or you're shosei, you're quiet, and shtika kodah damim. In a certain sense, that puts odas baldin into the framework of edus. Because the halacha of Eidus is such that once a person testifies, that's binding. There's no way he can reverse his testimony or rescind his testimony. That's called Kevan Shehigid, Shuv Eino Chozer Umagid. If we apply those you know, those rules and those yardsticks go das bal din. And when we say kimei edim dami yislai ka'odas edus, then I want you to know, if you're an aid, you don't have even the rights to reinterpret your edus. You give your edus over to Bezdin. Bezdin takes over now. For example, the Gemara says in Masechta Ksubos that if the edim are signed on a shtar, they no longer have rights to interpret the shtar. Say, well, you know, he sold it, but there was a condition in the sale, and that condition was never met. They want to add to their edus or reinterpret their edus. They're not believed. Kevin Shehigin, once they testify, Bezdin takes over. Now everything's in the hands of Bezdin. Forget about the Edom themselves. Or do we say no? Haidah Shasik, etc. We have an explanation for a shtika. What good is an explanation for a shtika? And the answer is that Odas Baldin is not a Loch of Edus. It's not a testimony in Bezdin. But rather, it is evidence, it's Hochacha. Let's take the case, for example, of Eid Echad. Let's say one witness testifies in a monetary case. There, the halacha is not kevin shehigin shuvin echad v'magid. Why? Because Eid Echad is not edus, it's nemanus. It's all a matter of whether we trust him or not. If he gives us a convincing argument to justify or reinterpret what he said initially, we'll accept that, even if it means that we'll have to undermine his original testimony. L'mad over Dome, for example, we find in Isa V'Heter that there's such a thing called Eid Echad Nem Bisur. But if he gives us an Amasla and he explains why he said it, for example, the famous case in the Gemara Nida, where she said Tmei Ani, and now today she comes in and she says, no, I didn't mean it seriously, I only said it because I was in a bad mood, I didn't want to have any sort of intimacy with my husband. If that Amasla is convincing, if the circumstances indicate that she's telling the truth and we can rely on the Amasla, then we remove her original testimony and we undermine it. How can you validate testimony? Kevin Shehigit. The answer is because that's only Eid Echad Nema Bisurim. That's Nemanus, it's not Eidus. In fact, the Gemara says that the Shochet doesn't even have to tell us that the Shechit is Kshera. As long as he sends it to us, or he leaves it in a place where we'll pick up the animal, we assume that he testified. Why? In Eidus we make no assumptions, but in Eid Echad, in Isurim, that's already a different halacha in Nemanus. So again, there are two nafkaminas between Eidus and Nemanus. In Eidus, Kevin Shehigit Shuv Eni Chozer Magid, under any no circumstance will allow him to reinterpret what he said. Whereas in Eid Echad, Nem Bisur, we have what's called an Amasla, in which we can accept his reinterpretation and explain why he said what he said, but it has no implication whatsoever. And the second halacha that really differentiates Eidus from Eid Echad Nem Bisurin is that in Eidus you need Hagadah B'peh. You actually have to stand in front of Bezdin and you have to tell your story. That's testimony. Mashenkin in Eid Echad, if circumstances indicate that he's trying to transmit a message, that's enough for Eid Echad Nem Bisurin. Now, what about Odas Bal Din Kimei Eidim Domi? How do we view that? In Dini Mamonos, now we're shifting from Issa to Mamon. That's the original paradigm. In Mamon, if a person says something, then how literal do we take it? Is it absolutely binding, like Eidus, with all the restrictions that apply to Eidus? Which would mean that we certainly cannot accept it a masla, because Kevin Shehigin Shuvin Echozu Magin. What should we say? No. Hodas Bal Din is always begeder nemanus. It's not Eidus. It's like Eid Echad Nem Bisurin. And therefore, we can accept his reinterpretation of his original Eidus. So that's what I found in the Achronim. I personally have a problem. I just, you know, I like to share with you my challenges. Maybe you'll help me, you know, navigate through this problem. Our sugya is talking about a case of shtika. In other words, Ruvei grabs onto Shimon's talis in front of Beis Din, and Shimon says nothing initially. Now he wants to reinterpret and give us an amasla why he didn't say anything. Lefianis Daiti would seem that in that case we're surely not talking about Eidus, because he said nothing. He was totally silent. The best you can do with that is circumstantial nemanus. What I mean is that circumstances indicate that Reuven has a good claim, and that's why he grabbed the talus, and Shimon is not complaining about it. In such a case, if you're dealing with Ne'emanus, I don't understand Rabbi Zeira's suffix. For sure, the Baal HaNe'emanus is believed to explain, again, if we accept his explanation, his alibi, so to speak, is reasonable, why he did what he did, or in this case, why he didn't do what he should have done. Why didn't you yell and scream? So I'm more inclined to think, Lefiani is daiti, and it's not like the Achronim, that here the Gemara assumes up front that Hodas Baldin is not Eidus. And we should accept an Amasla to reinterpret, in this case, his Shtika. But the only problem is, it's a little bit iffy over here. In other words, we don't want to, you know, we don't know how to be convinced that his explanation is valid. You know, he's saying, well, I felt I didn't have to make a big ruckus about it because Bezdin is there. And maybe the Gemara is now vacillating whether or not we really accept such an Amasla. Meaning in the case of Eidech and Bisurin, we have a good Amasla. You know, if the Shochet tells you why he said it was treif and you're convinced that he's telling the truth now and you have no reason to suspect him, that's one thing. But here the man has vested interest. He should have made Amacha. So he's saying, no, I relied on Bezdin. Is that a convincing Amasla or is it not a convincing Amasla? Maybe that's what Rabbi Zeira is clearing about. So I would veer away from the question about whether it's a case of Eidus, because how can it be Eidus if he does nothing and he says nothing? I wouldn't call that Eidus. I would call it Ne'emanus. It's circumstantial evidence. It might be very weighty, but it's not a Hodas Baal Din in the sense of Eidus. Why shouldn't we believe him, therefore, when he comes with an Amasla to explain why he was shosek, why he didn't say a word? So then it comes out, again, this is the weak point of my argument, that Rav Zeira is vacillating back and forth whether this is an Amasla Tova or not an Amasla Tova. Should a man be justified by saying, I'm not going to make a big deal about this because Bezdin is going to take over here? They're going to certainly... They saw what happened. They're going to certainly reverse the situation and undermine and completely neutralize Reuven's tfisa, his grabbing onto my talis. So the balance of the sugya here is to try to prove one way or the other what is the answer to Rabbi Zeira's suffering. Now, he says here in the footnote that the Ran initially thought one way about the Suffolk Rav Zeira, and then he changed his mind. Initially, the Ran thought that the Suffolk of Rav Zeira, what Rav Zeira was vacillating back and forth about, was Udana Shel HaNitkaf. When we have a Hodah through Udana, meaning the Nitkaf, that's Shimon as we called him, the victim of this Tkifa, was silent, do we have an Udana that would generate Hodah Spaldin? Is that called a Hodah or is it not called a Hodah? And it all depends upon whether this Umdana is a reliable Umdana. You know, the circumstances indicate that the Nitkaf is justified, or at least psychologically justified, in saying nothing. And is that a reliable Umdana? But the Ran rejects this. And he says, Lo Yitochin Lomar, that we should allow the tokev to walk away with this talis, is machmas sheyeshkan hoda. Why? Because he says, for sure, if we have a suffix, whether this hoda is valid or not, that's what we call a tzad, a suffix umdana, then for sure, Bezdin has no right to allow someone to grab onto someone else's talus and pocket it and then claim it for his own based on a suffix. So therefore, how could it be possible that the Gemara even raises the alternative that maybe Bezdin should follow a non-intervention policy? They should allow Shimon, they should allow Reuven to continue to grab onto the talis and take it home. How could that be possible? We have a tefisa, but we're not sure if that tefisa is gzela or not gzela. We have to go back to square one. Bezdin is obviously obligated to reverse the situation, and it's no longer that Reuven is grabbing onto the talis. because in a case of Safek, we cannot allow anyone to grab onto someone's talus and claim it for his own just because of a Safek. Now, the truth is, again, I'm confused about this Ran because of a sugya later on, which is on Daf Vav Amud Beis, we're not up to it yet, called Tokfa Kohen. There the Gemara says that the Kohen grabs on to the Safek Bechor and we don't remove him from that. We have to leave it in his hands. And why? Because there's a Safek. What am I going to say? Well, it's not a Bechor, and therefore we're going to take it away from him. He's claiming that it is a Bechor. We don't know whether it's a Bechor or not. But you see clearly from the sugya of Tokfa Kohen that in the case of the Safek, and now somebody who was Tofes it, is Bezin has to follow a non-intervention theory and leave the situation of the Tokef as is. Because otherwise, they're taking money or an object, a possession, out of the hands of the Mukhzar based on a Safek. So we see that in a Safek, Bezin should not get involved in undermining the tekifa. We're going to have to recognize the validity of that tekifa. The Ran, on the other hand, says no, that if the talus was in a Safek situation, what should we do? He says, Yesh Tzad, Rabbi Zera thinks that perhaps La Mita Biyado, maybe we should allow him to continue his ownership rights on this talus. Why? Because the talus was always in a Safek. He says, Kevan Shatalus Hoysa B'Safek Ad Ata. So we don't know if this Hodah is a valid Hodah. L'kach Moel Gam Safek Hodah L'Amida B'Chezka Satofe. So it seems that the Ran, if I'm understanding correctly, is actually accepting our point, our analogy to Tokfa Kohen. First I thought when I read the Ran that he's against our understanding of Tokfa Kohen. Now I think the Ran would support Tokfa Kohen. In other words, the Ran is saying that if we have a Safek Umdana, then, right, because
where is the Safek?
The Safek,
we don't know whether it belongs to Shimon or not?
Correct. We're not sure if it belongs to Shimon. Shimon didn't say anything initially when Reuven grabbed it. Reuven's claiming he grabbed this.
Shimon's holding it.
Right.
And then along comes Reuven. So it's obvious that it belongs to Shimon.
Right. So that's what he says initially. He says, Afshu Safek al Hodah, because we're not sure where this Hodah, you know, that's what he said before in his original presentation to Safek Umdana. So we have now a Safek on the Hodah. We're not sure if that Hodah is a real Hodah. Is in this case, Yesh Tzad Lamida Biyado, which if I understand correctly, the Ran is saying that maybe we should leave the talus in the hands of Reuven, who is Tokev. Why? Because the talus is in a state of Safek. In other words, if Rav Zera is vacillating back and forth, is this an Umdana of Hodah or is it not an Umdana of Hodah? Then the final answer to Rabbi Zera's problem should be leave the talus wherever it is. And if Reuven grabbed on the talus and we have 50% of a chance that Shimon was moder, then we don't have the right to take it, to rip it out of the possession of Reuven, the tokev. And the nitkaf is going to lose in this case. And I think the Ran is reflecting what we saw by Tokfa Kohen, Ein Motzi Oso Miyodah, that since the Safek and the Kohen took the law into his own hands and he grabbed onto it, we can't take it away from him. Is therefore lechach moel gam sofek hodah la mido becheskes hatokev. When we want to rip it out of the hands of Reuven, because Reuven is the tokev, then Reuven has a right to say, well, wait a minute, there may have been a hodah here. You don't know if it was a valid hodah or not a valid hodah. How can you take it out of my possession based on a sofek? Again, just to summarize, the Ran is saying, I cannot accept the original position that Rav Zera is vacillating as to whether this Umdana is a reliable Umdana or not. Meaning the Umdana that he was moda because he was Shosek, is that reliable or not? Maybe he was shosek because he thought Beis Din would take care of the situation. So if that's what Rav Zeir is vacillating about, then the bottom line should certainly be, as in any case of Safek, that you can't take the mamon out of the hands of the tokev, because hamotzi mechavela of a riot. Go prove that this umdana is not a valid umdan, right? That he really was not moda. You the burden of proof is on you. Once I was tokev, which again is a pretty radical position, but it does seem to reflect the tokfa koin of ein motzino so miyada. So now the Ran has to come up with a new explanation as to why Rabbi Zera thinks in one side that we're going to be able to take the talis out of the hands of the tokev, even though lechor it's a suffix. He says, "Lefi atzad hasheni b'gemara ein kan oda." So one side is that this is not oda, because again, as Shimon, the original litkaf, justifies his oda by saying that then Bezdin should certainly take care of it. So what's the tzad to say that we don't have hodah and therefore we're going to take this object out of the hands of the tokev, take this talis or whatever.
Totally or half?
Totally. Correct, because again,
Shimon comes into Bezdin,
right,
with the talis.
Right.
Along comes Reuven and takes it.
Right.
And we're going to say it belongs totally to Reuven.
So wait, let's add one more factor, and then we'll just fill in one blank here. Shimon says nothing. Then Shimon starts yelling and screaming.
Right.
So lechor at that point we should leave the talis in the hands of the tokev, right? Because he was shosek. So the Gemara says, "Nay, we're not sure. That shtika is questionable." I'm just explaining the hava mina of the Ran now. The Ran's Havamina was that the Gemara is vacillating. Again, Rav Zeira is suffix. Boy, Rav Zeira is Odilma. Perhaps we could say that the reason why he was Shosik is not because he was Moda, but because he relied on Bezin. Haid the Shosik, Sovaka, Hakachazi Le Rabban.
Right, but he's the Muchsak.
So what happens in the following case? We have a suffix Bechar, and the Yisrael is Muchsak. The Kohen comes along and he says, "No, it's a Bechar. You fork it over." So the Gemara says, "Hamotzi mechavel raya," that the Kohen, the burden of proof is on the shoulders of the Kohen. He hasn't proven that it's a Bechar. Then the Gemara says, "But talk for Kohen. If the Kohen took the law into his own hands and he grabbed it, now at this point the Kohen can turn to the Yisrael and say, well, go prove that it's not a Bechar. I claim it is a Bechar. Go do me something.' And the Yisrael has no claim." So the Gemara says, "Ein motziyim yada." So it's very interesting, because a minute ago, we said that the Kohen is the loser here in this case. Mm-hmm. Why? Because Hamotzi Mechavero, he hasn't induced any evidence to the effect that this is a Bechar. Now 5 minutes later, all of a sudden, we turn to the Yisrael and we say, "You go prove that it's not a Bechar." Why? Because what happened in the 5 minutes interim? The Kohen grabbed onto this animal. So again, if I understand correctly, the Ran doesn't officially quote that Gemara, but I'm hoping that that's the deeper meaning behind the Ran. The Ran says if the Gemara is to be taken literally, and we're not sure what was the nature of that shesika initially, when Reuven grabbed the talus, was that a real hodah? Well, no, it was only because he was relying on Beis Din. So the Ran says that if you're going to argue that that's the pshat, and the ultimate vacillation here is what's called Safek Umdana, in other words, is the shtika a valid Umdana that he was moda, that it's not his talus, Shimon? Or is it not a valid Umdana? That's called the Safek Umdana. Then the Ran argues that the law should clearly be that, and Rav Zeira should have no doubt about it, that we leave the talis in the hands of whoever is toe-faced now. Forget about ancient history, like in the case of Sofik Bechar, whoever now is toughest. That's what Beis Din has to, they have to oblige or recognize the validity of the.
You can't compare the two cases.
Yeah.
I have a problem with that. With Tokfa Kohen, you can't have, it's either belongs to the Jew or belongs to the Kohen. You can't have chatzi chatzi, right?
Right.
But here, you can. It's he's a muchzak in the Talmud, and the best that can happen is that the other half belongs to the guy who grabbed it. Nobody can claim that the guy who grabbed it is the owner of it. He's not. He wasn't the muchzak. He's just the token. So there, I don't see the connection.
Let me try to understand what you're saying. I'm going to try to go over it in my mind.
I'm not sure I understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, in the case of the Kohen, what we're saying
it's
is
either or.
That's either or. There's no 50-50, right? Right. There's no splitting of the Bechar. Either it is a Bechar or it's not a Bechar. So in such a case, we leave it in the hands of the Muchzak, of the Tofes, of the Tokef in this case, okay. Which might very well be the Kohen if he took the law. Okay. But here, we should certainly say, wait a minute, second. So again, here, since what?
At best, the Tokev can get half of it.
Right.
Why the whole thing? Still, he's a muksak. He's coming in with the Bezin sees it's his talus. Now, whether it the Tokev.
His meaning Shimon, if you know Shimon. What I mean, the Nitkaf, right?
Shimon.
And now Bezdin
watches Reuven take half of it,
right?
And Shimon is quiet,
right?
So it seems to me it's obvious that the Bezdin saw what was going on.
So what would be your inclination in this case? Should we rip it out of the hands of Reuven and give the whole talus back to Shimon? Or
my feeling is yes, because I hold the svara of Zera. That Bezdin would have quiet because Bezdin saw what happened and they'll intervene.
Right, but keep in mind, Rabbi, we're trying to understand Reb Zera. You know, you could agree with one side of Reb Zera, but Reb Zera vacillates back and forth. The Ran is trying to explain
why is
Reb Zera in doubt about this. So initially, again, we'll see how the Ran changes it. He calls it a suffik umdana. Reb Zera is really not sure whether or not we're convinced that the reason why it was Shulzik is because of X, meaning the presence of Bez. We're not sure about it. Counsel on the Rani says.
So what's the assumption? If it's not Bez, then why is she Shulzik? Because it's really not his talus to begin with?
Correct.
So he's not
the Ran's Havamina, right? I'm trying to understand the Ran's Havamina and to try to understand why the Ran rejects this Havamina.
So we have to say that we don't know whether it belongs to Shimon.
Correct. That's called in the Ran's language, that's called the Suffolk Umdana. We don't know. As a general rule, if a person is Shosek, that's an Umdana of Hodah, of Shikik Hodah. But in this particular circumstance where it took place in the present business, it's a Suffolk where that Hodah. Whether this umdana of Hodah is really a valid umdana. So we don't know what to do in this case that he was shosek initially. Says the Ran, that can't be the pshat. Why? Because if we really have a bona fide suffek about umdana, then once Reuven took possession over half the talus, we'll talk about that half that he's holding on to, Reuven now has a right to say to Shimon, you disprove the umdana, meaning now the burden of proof is on you, to reinterpret the shtika, because halachically, according to Reb Zera, we have a suffix here. We don't know whether this umdana is valid or not. So you want to tell me, Mr. Shimon, that this umdana is not a valid umdana. But we don't know. We don't have proof to that effect. We're still in the dark. So what the Ran wants to do here is he wants to inject into Reb Zera some sort of additional variable that will justify why Reb Zera thinks that maybe we should remove Reuven's tfisa, or shall we say, other mahain, or invalidate Reuven's tfisa on half the talus. So he says, "Bibir atzada sheni b'gemara she'ein kan hodah," which would explain why we're going to remove that tfisa. Kasav Haran, the Ran offers two answers to this question. Ha'ofen Arishon, the first answer is, Achen, Ein Zu Hodah, Shalois Kaven Lehodos Klal. He says that one possibility is to say that this is not a Hodah, because again, as we said before, the reason why it was Shosik is because he relies upon Bezdin. Va'ofen ha'acher hu, shegam lefi tzad ze yesh kan sofek hoda. El she'ein sofek hoda moil kan, kevin shechetzi hoya biyana nitkaf, shalohu bevados v'ein sofek motzi midei vada. So if I understand this correctly, again, this, the language of the Ran is a bit challenging. I think what he's saying is that on the one hand, we have a Safek Hodah, and there is a possibility that this Hodah was not really intended to be a Hodah. No, Sishika was not a Hodah. And the other tzad, he says, Ha'ofen Ha'acher, is to say that even so, even if I grant you that there's a Safek Hodah, Ein Safek Hodah Moil Kan, the Safek Hodah is not meaningful, Kevon Shachetzi Shahoye Biala Nitkaf, Shalohu Bivados. In other words, the Tokev has no valid claim on the other half of the talus, right? We're only going to...
Yeah,
so this is your point. So it means that the Tokev, at best, can claim half the talus. Now, we have to look at the talus as one entity, and with regard to half the talus, we know beyond a shadow of a doubt that it belongs to the original Muchzak, right? That's, we call him Shimon. And there's no Dinu Dvarim, there's no... deliberation or controversy over half the talis. Now the Tokev wants to claim, well, there's a Safek Hodah on the other half of the talis, the half of the talis that I grabbed onto. Well, there's a Safek Hodah. Now what do you do in this case? So you might argue that in Safek Hodah we have to leave things as is. You know what I mean? No intervention on behalf of Beis Din. Leave well enough alone. What we call status quo, as we saw in the case of the Kohen. But the answer is no. This is different than the Kohen. Why? Because we have a principle here called Ein Safek Motzi Midei Vadai. That since, according to everybody, and there's no debate about this, half the talus for sure belongs to Shimon. Now, we have a Safek about the other half of the talus. Here, it could be that a Safek in this situation, because again we have a Safek Hodah, would not be powerful enough to give the Tokev any rights whatsoever, even on the half that he's Tokev, because as far as the Talus as an entity is concerned, we have a definite Vados on half the Talus. Now, in order to understand this Ran, I thought it would be meaningful to go back to Daf Beis Amud Aleph and take a look at Tosfos. Just one second, let me get the page here. Sorry. Bear with me for just a minute. Oh. Tosis Dibra Maskil Vizet Notil Revir. And Tosis has a sugya in Mesechti Yevamos. This is a case of a Safek Yavam. Alright, we'd have to go through the whole family. I need a chart here. But let's suffice it to say the following. There's Reuven and Shimon. Reuven is a definite Yorish. And Shimon is a Safek Yorish. That's called in the Gemara's language, Safek V'Yavam. So the Yavam is definite. And there's another individual who's a Safek. So the Gemara says the following. We're not going to give the Safek one quarter of the Yerusha. We're going to give him absolutely zero. Why? Because the Gemara says that we have a principle called Ein Safek Motzi Midei Vadai. And again, if you're looking at the Tosfos on Daf Beis Amud Aleph, the lines of the Tosfos get wide at the bottom, and we're looking at the third of the wide lines. Again, the Gemara is quoted here on the second of the white line, but the third of the white line, he says, the last few words are, Ein Sofek Motz Midei Vada. So it means if you have a Vada Yoresh, and now the issue is, does he have to fork over half of the Yerusha because there's another Yoresh, and that other Yoresh is the status of Sofek, then we apply the principle of Ein Sofek Motz Midei Vada. And therefore, the Vada Yoresh is going to get the entire Yerusha. Even though on half of the Yerusha he's a Suffolk, and the other person who's a Suffolk has just as much of a claim to that half of the Yerusha as he does, just flip a coin, it's 50-50. There's no evidence whatsoever that the Vada Yoresh should claim the inheritance on the other half. But nevertheless, we have a principle as follows, that since he's Vada on half the Yerusha, therefore, ain't Suffolk Motzim Vade Vada. No one could create a Suffolk unless he proves beyond a shadow of a doubt that he is also a Yoresh, and therefore he deserves half. So on that other half, until there's proof positive that there's another Yoresh, we're going to grant and award that half to the Vada Yoresh. Even again, Rav Osei emphasized the fact that the Vada Yerusha is only on half.
No, that's not so. The Vada Yoresh, he gets it all. It's the other guy who wants to share it.
Okay, Rabbi, you're already up to Tosis's answer. But in Tosis Havamina, Tosis understood. No, listen carefully to Tosis Havamina. Tosis Havamina is, if there's another Yoresh, then that Yoresh has half. He gets that other half. And there's a 50% chance that he is a Yoresh. Right? We have 50-50 on whether he's a Yoresh. So Tosis says, you see a radical chiddush, which again he's going to reinterpret in his answer, but at least right now, what happens is that statistically, on half of this Yerusha, there's a 50% chance that we'll call him Reuven should get that half, that half of the estate should be coming to Reuven. So if in statistical probability, Reuven has at least the same amount of probability as Shimon, at least give him half of that half. Let's split that half. He should get revealed. And we should apply the same principle that the Gemara applies to the case of Zeh Omer Kula Shali, V'Zeh Omer Chetzi Shali, where since it's Vade on half, on the other half we're going to split it, because on the other half it's 50-50. So we're going to give three quarters to Reuven and one quarter to Shimon. Why not apply the same principle in the Gemara and Yevamos? So Tosis answers that there's something called a Shev Yoresh. And he says that Reuven is trying to squeeze his way in here and say, I'm also a Yoresh. But he hasn't proven his status as a Yoresh. Shimon, on the other hand, has a Vadai status as a Yoresh. And that gives him Vados on the entire estate. He has a Vadai Shem Yoresh. So again, Rabbi Osei, why do I mention this Tosis to you? Because Tosis in his Havamina understood that Ein Sofek Motzim Midei Vadai applies to, not statistics, but rather to the entity as a whole. So if we look at this estate as a whole, then we definitely have a Vadai in favor of, let's call him Shimon, that Shimon definitely is in ownership of at least 50% of this estate. Correct? That he deserves at least 50%. And now, according to Tosis Havamina, that 50% on this estate is going to give him a status of a muchzak even on the other 50%, even though he only has a vade on 50%. But it doesn't matter, we look at the estate as one entity. And why do I mention this to you? Because I think that might be the underlying logic of the Ran over here. The Ran is saying that with regard to this talis, we know for sure that Shimon has half the talis. Once we know for sure that Shimon has half the talis, if Reuven is claiming that there was a hodas baldin on the other half, then the burden of proof is now placed on his shoulders because of the principle of ain't suffering motz midei vada, which means we look at the talis as one indivisible entity, and since Shimon has a definite claim to at least half the talis, that gives him a definite position with regard to the entire talis. And now if Reuven wants to, you know, wiggle his way in here and claim, well, I'll prove to you that half the talis is mine because Shimon said nothing when I grabbed it, is then the burden of proof is on the shoulders of Reuven to establish that there was a Hodas Baldin. We're not sure that there was Hodas Baldin because, again, there was a Safek Umdino. We don't know if he was quiet initially because he relied on Bezdin. And now we're going to apply the principle, says the Ran, of Ein Sofek Motzim Midei Vadai. And that was the tzad in Rav Zeira's Safek to say that we have to force the tokev to give up half the talus that he's toface on, that he was tokev. Why? Because ain't Safek motzim de vadai. One tzad in Rav Zeira was that we have a vadai umdana. And if we have a vadai umdana, we say that Reuven deserves half the talus because Shimon was shosik. But now the Gemara backtracks and say, well, no. Rav Zeira has decided to say it's only a suffering of Umdana. The reason why he was shosik is for another reason. If that be the case, says the Ran, we're going to apply the principle of ain't suffering motzim de'vadai. So it's not like the case of Tokfa Kohen. In the case of Tokfa Kohen, we cannot apply the principle of ain't suffering motzim de'vadai, because there's no one who has vados over here. It's a suffix bechar, which means either belongs to the Israel or belongs to the Kohen. But in our case of a talis, where we know for sure that half the talis belongs to Shimon, then we're going to apply the principle of ain suffix motzim deivadi, and we're going to force the tokev to give up on his tfisa because of ain suffix motzim deivadi. The other side in Rav Zeira is to say, no, we have a definite hodah here because shtika kodah, and that's enough for Reuven to maintain his ownership over half the talis. Okay, that's as far as we can get for today. Now.